glad to have our visitors with us today. We have several. We appreciate your presence. Thank you for coming and for being a part of our service. And we look forward to talking with you if we've not had that opportunity before service began. We're glad you're here today. Lord willing, this will be the year that we are able to add on to our building and provide more seating capacity. There's several hoops we still have to jump through prior to that. But one of the deacon's wives has put in a suggestion already that apparently we need to take note of. She has suggested that since a lot of our ladies like to color, that it would be helpful in the new auditorium if we didn't have these tray tables like in airplanes that will come down and that during the lesson they could color. You know, I've thought all these years that people are actually taking notes, Jason. What I've learned is that some of them are coloring, apparently. So I guess at the conclusion of the lesson, I will say, now take your tray tables and place them in the upright and locked position. I don't know if I ought to tell who that deacon's wife was or not, but you've got your work to do on your way home with your mama. You got that? That'll give you something to talk about. Can you believe that? Yeah, you can believe that. Okay. Turn to your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 6, if you will. Marty read to us moments ago a greater section of this passage, and I won't read that again. But I do want to focus on a couple of statements that he makes in Hebrews chapter 6, verses 18 and 19. Hebrews 6, 18 and 19. He says to us at the end of verse 18, to take hold of the hope that is set before us. This hope, he says, we have as an anchor of the soul, a hope both sure and steadfast. Hope is to a Christian what an anchor is to a boat. Anchors are essential. They are put on a boat for a reason. And they are put on a boat to be put into place to keep the boat from drifting where you don't want it to be. Julie and I were in Tampa this past week, and we go down there every year and have now literally for decades, the first week of February to attend the lectures at Florida College. And the last several years, we just got to where we just rent a house since we're going to be down there for a week. And have found actually it's a little bit cheaper than even some hotel accommodations. And so this past week I had booked a house a few months ago. That was sort of odd. It was in downtown Tampa where the Hillsborough River becomes very wide right before it empties out into Tampa Bay. And along this area are all the homes on the river, and they all have these docks that go out into the river. And on the end of this one dock, somebody's built a small little house. It looks sort of like a shack. It looks like the kind of thing that a husband would say, let's stay there, and a wife would say, well, you can stay there by yourself. It is literally at the end of the dock, surrounded on all four sides by water. So we weren't staying on the river. We were staying in it. And there are no rails. And she kind of found that disconcerting. There's no rails walking out to it. There's no rails on the dock decking area around it. It's about 4 feet wide. I would not recommend the house for the Bradleys. Might want to rethink that. But for us, it was fine. And we were sitting out there one afternoon eating our Chick-fil-A. We'd picked up some and brought it back to the house. And we're sitting out there one day, and apparently alligators like Chick-fil-A. I didn't know that. And so one paid us an up-close and personal visit, and my wife decided to take her Chick-fil-A and go back inside the little house. But all around us, at the end of every dock, up the river, down the river, it didn't make any difference. Everybody seemed to have a boat. And some of the boats were quite nice, and some of the boats were quite small, and some of the boats were in between. But I'll tell you something about every one of those boats. They all had an anchor. Because it's the anchor that keeps the boat where it needs to be. And so my question to you this morning is, what keeps you where you need to be? If you back up a page, just turn back one page in the book of Hebrews to chapter 2 and verse 1. He says, for this reason, we must pay much closer attention to what we have heard so that we do not, listen to his language, so that we do not drift away from it. The Bible, from beginning to end, warns God's people about the danger of drifting. That's why it is essential that you set your anchor. This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, a hope that is sure and steadfast. So let me say some things this morning, briefly, about hope. Is there a more needed subject in our day of despondency and despair and discouragement and depression than hope? I'll tell you, without hope, you're not going to make it. Without hope, your life gets reduced to simply jumping from one tragedy to the next to the next. Without hope, you fall down into the well of failure and you stay there. I am told that the most oft-repeated word in suicide notes is the one word, hopeless. The psalmist referred to that in Psalm 27 and verse 13. Psalm 27 and verse 13, I would have despaired unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. He said, I would have given up hope if I didn't have the hope of God. Jesus said in John 16:33, in the world you have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world. Take courage, take hope. That's the idea. In Romans 15 and verse 4, whatever was written in earlier times was written for our instruction, that we through the perseverance and encouragement of the Scriptures might have hope. This hope we have as an anchor of the soul. Hope is a wonderful gift of God's grace. Because when you get discouraged, hope is what lifts your spirits. When you're tempted to quit, hope says, go one more day. When you've been diagnosed with a difficulty in your physical body, and maybe it is a disease or an illness, hope helps you persevere through the unknown and through the pain. When you fear the worst, hope reminds you, you're not in control. God is. When you face the consequences of your own bad decisions, hope motivates recovery. When you're forced to wait on God, hope gives you the patience to trust. When you feel rejected, when you feel abandoned, when you feel lonely, hope reminds you that as long as you walk with God, that there is the promise of a better day. Hope, when you say your final farewells, is the only thing that's going to get you through the grief. How do people make it who aren't Christians? Honestly, they don't. They don't make it. They deny it. They fake it. They find something else to fill the hole. Often turning to artificial means to cope and to escape. But the one thing they cannot do is face the hard times in life with a quiet, confident hope. Only the Christian can do that. Finish the words. Finish the words. Because He lives. What? I can face tomorrow. Because He lives, all fear is gone. Because I know who holds the future and life is worth the living just because He lives. He lives. We sing the song, "My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness." And what that spells? It spells the words of another song, "Blessed assurance, confident conviction, hope." Let me give you a little life advice. You better take your anchor and you better put it down really deep, because you're going to need it. I read about in the New Testament a man who loved boats and who loved the water because he spent a lot of time in his vocation, which was fishing. And his name was Simon Peter. When it came to fishing, Peter knew his stuff. He was determined, he was confident, sometimes cocky, we might say. When it came to friendships, he was loyal. Almost. Sometimes Peter made statements with his mouth that his body did not want to keep. On one occasion in Luke 22, in verse 31 and verse 32, Jesus warned Peter that Satan was coming after him. Luke 22, verse 31, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat, but I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail." Now, Peter's response in verse 33, he said unto him, "Lord, I am ready to go both to prison and to death." But Jesus said unto him in verse 34, "I say to you, Peter, the rooster will not crow today until you have denied me three times that you even know me." Jesus knew that Peter's anchor wasn't very deep. And although the prediction must have stung, Peter pushed it aside, overconfident as usual, that it would never happen. But you know the rest of the story. It did happen. And that very night, the words of Jesus became reality. As Peter failed, not once or twice, but three times, he denied the Lord. And so here is the once loyal, courageous, committed disciple. And the scene ends with this grown man sitting alone, heaving sobs of heavy regret over what he had done. He had failed, he had forsaken, he had denied, he had hit bottom. And don't you know, every time he closed his eyes, he could see that look of Jesus. When their eyes met after the third denial. And he had to live with that the rest of his life. And I wonder, as he stood at a distance when Jesus was crucified, if the nails driven into the hands of Jesus were not, in a sense, driven into Peter's own heart as well. He would go back and undo the horror and the pain of that night if he could. He could not. And in Peter's mind, he had lost it all. He was done. He was washed up. He was finished. He lost his hope. And then in Mark 16, verse 7, came the angelic announcement on the first day of the week. Go tell the disciples and Peter. Go tell the disciples and Peter. Make sure Peter knows. Make sure Peter knows what? That he gets to bat again. That he gets another chance. And in those two words, go tell the disciples and Peter, Peter found his hope. Nobody helps another person more than someone who has been there and done that. Nobody helps a cancer patient more than someone who has already been through the rigors of chemotherapy. Nobody talks to kids about the dangers of drugs and alcohol better than somebody who has made mistakes and come out the other side and they have a message. Nobody. can encourage someone who has buried a spouse more than someone who has been there and done that. Nobody can talk about hope for the hurting more than someone who has experienced the loss of his hope only to find it again. And that was Peter. And when you turn to the first letter that he wrote in 1 Peter chapter 1, beginning in verse 3, you see again and again throughout this little letter of 1 Peter, the message is hope, hope, hope. Blessed be, verse 3 of 1 Peter 1, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to His great mercy has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to obtain an inheritance which is imperishable and undefiled and will not fade away, reserved in heaven for you, who are protected by the power of God through faith for a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And though you have not seen Him, you love Him. And though you do not see Him now, but believe in Him, you greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, obtaining as the outcome of your faith the salvation of your souls. What's all that about? Hope. He's writing to Christians who have been scattered all over the Roman Empire because of their faith, and he's trying to give them some hope. And he does. Let me leave you with three quick points. If you've got your bulletin, just jot these things down. Because what he says in the rest of chapter 1, he says, if you live in hope, that means you have to live in holiness. If you live in hope, you have to live in holiness. Verse 13 of 1 Peter 1. Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope, he said. Fix your hope. It is easy to become intoxicated by the world and the glitz and the glitter and the glamour of Satan's temptations become very appealing. And Peter says, don't let that happen. He says, fix your hope. And he goes on in verse 15 and he says, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves also in all of your behavior, as it is written, you shall be holy because I am holy. The word holy means to be set apart. And yet it is hard to be set apart every day when we're surrounded by those who are very much apart. And we are surrounded by temptation and we are surrounded by wickedness. And that's why Peter says in verse 13, you better fix your hope. You got a mirror in your house? Every morning you stand in front of the mirror and what do? Somebody says, well, I stand in front of the mirror and I get depressed. Okay. You look in the mirror. Every time I look in the mirror, it reminds me God has a wonderful sense of humor. That's what I usually think about. But when you stand in front of the mirror, what do? You fix up. That's what you do. You fix your hair. You fix your clothing. You make sure you look presentable. You get everything fixed up. Peter says when you get up in the morning and you look in the mirror, you better fix your hope. Because you're going out in the world, it's not going to be easy. He says, fix your hope. In verse 17, secondly, he says, you better walk every day in fear. If you address as Father, the one who impartially judges according to each one's work, conduct yourself in fear during the time of your stay upon this earth. Doesn't mean you're afraid of God. That's not the point. The point is you have a healthy respect for Him. Solomon said the conclusion when all has been heard, fear God and keep His commandments. Have a holy reverence for Him. Walk in fear. And the last point he makes in verse 18 and 19, focus your mind. Knowing that you were not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold from your futile way of life, inherited from your forefathers, but with precious blood, as of a lamb unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ. How do you win the battle? Peter says, by remembering what Jesus did for you. He has set you free, he says in verse 18, from your futile way of life. When you live apart from Christ, your life is futile. When you live outside of Christ, every day you get up and you go through the motions. And tomorrow you get up and go through the motions. And Tuesday you get up and go through the motions. And every day you just go through the motions and life becomes futility. But what he's saying is we have been set free from all of that. We have a higher calling. We have a holy calling. We have a hope-filled calling. Verse 21, who through Him are believers in God, who raised Him from the dead and gave Him glory, so that your faith and your hope are in God. You see what He's doing? He's writing to people who are going through hard times and He's trying to give them some hope. And He's trying to give you some hope. And He's trying to give me some hope. I'm guessing that there's several of us who could use a little more hope. Hope to press on when life gets hard. Hope to stay focused. Hope to rise above temptation. Hope to battle through despair. Hope to fight through the frustrations of life. Hope to find purpose to my life. Hope to find meaning to my life. I meet people every day who need more hope. And I know where it is. I know who it is. And so do you. This hope we have as an anchor of our soul. Life advice. Anchor deep. Because you're going to need it. We sing the song of invitation this morning. If you're not a Christian, then you're floundering. You're walking every day in the futility of life. Your life is futile. You're just marking time. And wasting a lot of it. Why don't you give your life to Christ? Be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins and be cleansed by the blood of the Lamb. If we can help you in any way this morning, we certainly want to do that. Won't you come while we stand and sing?